Hello, I'm Brian Kim, and I'm a newly grad and a current postdoc at Seoul National University. And it is my pleasure to introduce to you our work on AutoSSC, an autonomic SSD architecture. AutoSSC self-manages its internal FTL tasks to maintain a stable system state and thereby keeps the performance variation under control. We demonstrate the effectiveness of our design by holistically considering multiple facets of the SSD and by evaluating across a diverse set of workloads. We also show that our design reduces not only the average response time, but also the 3.9s and 6.9s QoS. So just to go off script, I wanted to mention that recent research work in terms of in-device SSD techniques have kind of dwindled, but hopefully by the end of this presentation, I can convince you that there still exists a lot of opportunities to work on. So going forward, before we get into the details, I'll go through some of this background on flash memory storage to understand why they exhibit these performance variations. As you may already well know, flash memory has become widely popular in recent years, finding its place across a variety of storage, from USB sticks to enterprise-class SSDs. And these flash storages are in turn used in a wide range of devices, such as smartphones, laptops, to large-scale storage systems servicing mission-critical applications. So then, how does flash storage perform? While SSDs generally boast about this high performance over hard disk drives, large-scale deployments and user experiences reveal that SSD's performance isn't actually up to par. Google revealed that performance variations at the underlying hardware level makes it very difficult to provide interactivity. And in mobile and client end of the spectrums, performance variation at the storage affects the overall performance at the end products, such as MacBooks and laptops. This graph shows the throughput of 8 flash storages documented by SNIA's performance test specification. This graph is actually a few years old, but it still demonstrates the gist of the argument. So the first thing to notice is that compared to the initial performance, the performance toward the end kind of drops down significantly, down to as low as 5%. And second is that there is substantial jitter in the steady state region. We constructed a performance model for this flash storage, and the results were similar to these trends. This performance instability is undesirable not only for cloud storages that would that need service level agreements, but also for real-time systems where performance predictability is critical. So then, what causes these performance drops and variations in flash storages? A lot of prior work points to and blames SSD's internal garbage collection, citing that it increases the latency by 100-fold, or even describing as the source of a problem. But the truth is, garbage collection is a necessary evil for the flash storage. Garbage collection exists because of flash memory's quirks, and without garbage collection, the storage would run out of available space, causing host request handling to eventually stall. This means that garbage collection must be carefully scheduled with foreground tasks to ensure that there is enough space for the future, but also meeting the performance demands of the present. This need for harmonious coexistence, in fact, extends to every internal management task in the SSD. So mapping table is also needed because SSD prohibits in-place updates. And the limited amount of in-device DRAM means that only a subset of the mapping table could be kept inside the in-device DRAM. And this means that this generates additional traffic for consistency management with the persistent storage, but this is a mandatory step for locating the requested data. In the perspective of reliability, flash memory's error-prone nature and wide variety of ways in which errors could occur required modern SSDs to employ additional error handling techniques in addition to ECC and RAID. For example, rescrubbing, or sometimes also known as read reclaim, preventatively relocates data before its corruption. And this incurs overhead both in terms of performance, but also in terms of lifetime because of the copying and increased write amplification. But without this kind of preventative measures, SSD could lose this data and may need to employ heavyweight data recovery mechanisms like changing the voltage level and trying to read it again. And of course, repeated use of flash memory cells will cause them to stop working, and long-term strategies are needed to prevent cells from wearing out. As such, all these background FTL tasks are needed to hide the quirks of flash memory and export the illusion of a usable storage. And simply villainizing and suppressing them will only lead to greater performance degradations, or even worse, data loss. So then, let's take a look at some of the existing strategies for managing FTL tasks. One school of thought is to implement the FTL in the host system while keeping the flash storage relatively simple. This approach has the advantage of knowing more about the I/O workload, and with this knowledge, it could reschedule background tasks to keep up with the foreground demands. However, the downside of this approach is that the quirks of flash memory are exposed to the host system, and the software running in the host has to deal with it and become heavily dependent on the whims of the flash memory. And what I mean by this is that even if we abstract flash memory as erase a block, program a page, and read a page, there exists a semantic gap that needs to be covered by the software running in the host system. Another approach is to keep the FTL running inside a device, but have the host system exert some degree of control over it. This includes a triggering and or suppressing garbage collection from the host system, and this mechanism has culminated into the proposal of predictable latency mode in the upcoming NVMe specification. However, these decisions could be suboptimal as the host system doesn't know the exact details of the device The third category of work is to add intelligence to the flash storage so that it predicts the host workload. These techniques, armed with the knowledge of when the foreground I/O will be active or inactive, they could schedule background tasks so that they perform internal housekeeping while servicing foreground I/O with minimum interferences. These approaches, however, have the limitation when it comes to mixed I/O in multi-tenant environments and does not address the cases when there is sustained I/O. And finally, the last category is a clever technique that uses existing data redundancy inside SSD. For reliability measurements and enhancements, modern SSDs employ a RAID-like parity where parity data is stored into another location, and so that if the ECC fails, it would recover data using that kind of RAID-like parity. And this reliability mechanism could be used to improve the tail latency by reconstructing data when the requested data is actually busy because it's in use by a background task. However, the reliance of this technique increases the SSD's internal traffic when reconstructing data, and a RAID-like parity scheme reduces the overall usable storage inside the device, which in turn, from a product engineering point of view, may force the device to have a lower over-provisioning factor. So based on the limitations of prior techniques, we argue for the following three desired properties of the flash storage. First, it should be able to make its own decisions when to perform this internal management. Second, the scheduling decision should work under both idle scenarios and heavy I/O. And lastly, the architecture should be FTL agnostic and be composable of different independent tasks and techniques. To that end, we propose an autonomic SSD architecture to satisfy the needs. First, the flash memory resources are virtualized so that each FTL task is given is oblivious of each other. And second, a simple yet effective scheduler arbitrates flash memory resources among independent FTL tasks. And lastly, the importance of FTL tasks are dynamically adjusted based on the internal system states. To dive a bit more into the details, virtualization of the flash memory subsystem provides each FTL task with an illusion of a dedicated yet slower subsystem. This decouples task scheduling with the actual FTL algorithm and allows each FTL task to be oblivious of other task activities. Furthermore, this makes it easy to integrate new FTL tasks when needed, especially if new flash memory eccentricity is introduced to the system. The second component of the auto SSD is the debit scheduler that enforces the share among tasks. Share is an abstraction of how many resources a task could simultaneously use. And unlike the more well-known work-conserving schedulers like Round Robin or Fair Queuing, debit scheduling only needs to track the number of outstanding requests. And by doing so, the scheduler is actually not work-conserving, but we'll go into the evaluation details later. And lastly, the share for each task is dynamically adjusted through feedback control. For example, the number of free blocks represent the urgency of garbage collection. So if the number of free blocks is low, garbage collection should get a relatively high share so that it produces more blocks. And if there's plenty of free blocks, there's no incentive to perform or accelerate garbage collection. So let's go over some brief examples of to illustrate what debit scheduling does. Debit scheduling tracks the number of outstanding requests for each task which we call debit, and limits the maximum number of allowed debit, which we call debt, based on the number of shares. So in this example, task A is given can issue up to 5 requests, and task B could issue up to 3 requests. And even though task B has more more queued requests, its request cannot be scheduled as it is at its debt limit. And task A's request to chip 2 could be scheduled, increasing its debt from 1 to 2. Now, let's say task B's request at chips 3 has completed. This reduces the debit of task B down to 2, allowing its request to be rescheduled. Although task A's debit to debt ratio is much lower, task A's request cannot be scheduled because the chip 0's queue is full. This also implies that task A's workload lacks concurrency and is unable to fully utilize the provided parallelism at the moment. So compared to other scheduling disciplines such as fair queuing, the debit scheduler does not explicitly track time, but it favors requests with short turnaround times, meaning that it actually implicitly considers the notion of time. Also, the debit scheduler reserves resources and is not work conserving. That means that even if there are available requests to be scheduled and there are idle chips, the debit scheduler may not issue requests if the debit and the debt conditions do not satisfy. The share controller monitors the internal state of the SSD and determines the share for each FTL task in order to maintain those states at a stable level. For example, by keeping the number of free blocks at a steady level, performance variation is put under control. And by keeping the maximum read count below a certain threshold level, data loss caused by read disturbances are prevented. It is thus important to set appropriate values for these shares. So, for example, if the share for garbage collection is too low, the SSD could quickly run out of free blocks that will cause long-tail latencies. But if the share is too high, the progress of the other tasks, such as host request handling, would be relatively limited, meaning that it will lose on average performance. So the share controller needs to adaptively set the share through feedback control to satisfy both the average and tail latency requirements. And so there are a number of ways to implement feedback control, but we use the following PI control mechanism to look at the current error and the accumulated past errors. Error here means the difference between the desired state and the measured state value. And the accumulated past error is approximated by the past share value. So initially, we tried to construct a theoretical model on the theoretical model of the SSD to derive the optimal coefficients, but this actually proved to be a bit too complex, and we ended up empirically tuning these control coefficients. We demonstrate the effectiveness of our auto SSD by modeling on top of DiskSim and its SSD extension. A modest size SSD of 200 gigabyte was modeled, and we implemented a core FTL task such as host request handling, garbage collection, re-scrubbing, reclaim, or mapping table lookups. And these all cause performance variations, but are essential for the function of a storage. So garbage collection reclaims space, but it degrades performance under random writes. rescrubbing preventatively relocates data before data loss, but it creates background traffic on read-dominant workloads. And mapping table lookup is necessary to locate the host data, but it increases the response time on map cache misses. For the workload, we use both synthetic I/O testing and real I/O traces from Microsoft production servers, but we'll only describe the I/O traces in this presentation. Detailed results for the synthetic I/O could be found in the paper or during the poster session later today. For the I/O traces, we use two test scenarios, first with the original dispatch time, and second with half of the original dispatch time, which effectively doubles the request intensity. Detailed results for the increased I/O intensity is also skipped in this presentation, but could be found in the paper. For evaluation, we use the following four systems. First, the vanilla system schedules flash memory requests in the order of arrival, and this represents a system where FTL tasks compete for the flash memory resources without any virtualization. Second, RAIN employs a RAID-like parity scheme to reconstruct data when blocked by background tasks, and it arbitrates background and foreground tasks using a prioritized scheduler. Third is QSFC, where FTL tasks are scheduled based on weighted fair queuing, and the weights of the scheduler are determined by a p-control loop. And lastly, AutoSSD schedules FTL tasks in a non-work-conserving manner using a debit scheduler and uses a PI control loop. Let's first look at the average response time results. So here, only MSMB FS workload shows noticeable improvement, reducing the response time by 18%, while other workloads show only a minor improvement over the RAIN system, which was used as the baseline. But we observe a more pronounced difference for the 6.9 QoS. On average, AutoSSD reduces the tail latency by 43% and up to 77% for workloads such as RADAS. One interesting observation here is that while BEFS workload shows improvement in the average performance, it didn't show much improvement in the tail latency. So among the eight workloads that I/O workloads that we used, MSMBFS shows the highest I/O intensity, with the average request inter arrival time being less than half of the second most intensive workload. What this entails is that in the worst case, because of its high intensity, host request handling will become blocked by space reclamation. And also, the high I/O intensity also means that there's a higher chance of RAIN generating additional traffic to reconstruct data, which increases the overall queuing delay, causing worse average performance. Now, let's take a look at what happens during some of the workloads microscopically. The upper graph shows RADAS about 10 hours into the workload, and garbage collection is active during this window for all three systems. And both RAIN and QSFC in red and blue show latency spikes caused by garbage collection. The graph, but what we see is that AutoSSD keeps the latency under control. And the graph below shows the number of free blocks in dotted lines, and the solid line is the garbage collection share during that window of time. The sawtooth behavior of the number of free blocks is caused by free blocks being generated by garbage collection and the host system consuming them at once. The garbage collection share is reactively increased when the number of free blocks dips down, and then it gradually diminishes as the number of free blocks is regenerated. And this is another microscopic result for a different workload, LMTBE. In this case, rescrubbing became active because of the read-dominant characteristics of this workload. Similarly, we also observed that RAIN and QSFC show large latency spikes that last longer than the workload for RADAS. And this is because garbage collection is incentivized to select blocks with less valid data. Rescrubbing tends to pick blocks with a lot of valid data in it, causing its perturbation to be much longer. So AutoSSD, in effect, decreases the maximum recount of the system by dynamically adjusting the share of rescrubbing. And so this is going to be the last experimental results. We examined the effectiveness of the dynamic share assignment over the static ones. And this shows the response time CDF of auto SSD under the BFS workload with shares of 10% for garbage collection and 20% for garbage collection. And what we observe is that decreasing the garbage collection share from 20 to 10 improves the overall performance because more share is allocated to the host system, the host request handling. But further reducing it to 5% actually reduces the performance. What we see here is that the 5% curve dwindles and performs worse than the 10% curve. This indicates that higher GC share is desirable to reduce long tail latencies as it generates more free blocks at a higher rate. And feedback control using dynamically adjusting the share for garbage collection performs better than all the other static shares. So in this work, we presented the design of autonomic SSD architecture that self-manages concurrent FTL tasks in the flash storage. And by coordinating the use of resources by the flash memory subsystem, auto SSD manages to manages the progress of concurrent FTL tasks and maintains the internal system state at a stable level. And this stable self-management prevents the SSD from falling into a critical condition, which in turn causes long-tail latencies. In effect, auto SSD reduces not only the average performance, but also the 3.9s and the 6.9 TQS performance compared to other techniques. With that said, I conclude my presentation. I would appreciate if you could drop by during the poster sessions, and we'll be happy to take questions. Thank you.
Very nice presentation. Thank you, Brian. We're open for questions.
Hi, Keith Smith, NetApp. So I thought this was fun work. Of course, the great unanswered question, I don't know if you can provide any more insight into this, is, you know, this looks cool in a simulated environment. We're all using commercial SSDs with FTLs that aren't published. Any thoughts about how this might do compared to other systems, you know, real systems? I don't know if you have insight into their FTLs or whether you've been able to compare the distributions of tail latencies with real systems or give us any data to sort of how this maps to the real world.
So I guess I'm sort of in a pickle in between my internal opinions, but I think that because flash memory, the memory itself, they will do anything for higher density, and they will introduce more and more eccentricities in the future. So because of that, I think putting FTL inside the device is the right way to go, but at the same time, because it's mainly controlled by the industry, it's hard for researchers to kind of meaningful research in it. But at the same time, if I recall, I mean, I think DISCIM, in the disk industry, I think they did a very good job on modeling the internal mechanics of the hard disk drives. And I think continued cooperation and research could produce something much more accurate. And I think it was FAST this year, there was a paper on MQSIM, which actually correlated with commercial devices very closely. And I think we're going in the right direction of making better correlations.
Thank you.
This is Jay Sarkar from Western Digital. Great work. Kind of leading into the last Q&A, my question is more about if you might have any insights on not so much the what is in the FTL, but defects that are always generated internal to the SSD as it's operating. And that's like the variability in the NAND, and as you said, the density is increasing. This will only get worse probably, right, in the future. Mm-hmm. So that defect generation, would you say, is accounted for all the skins you compared, including your new one, or you think that is sort of outside the scope of the work that you've done?
You bring up a very good point, and actually, at the moment, flash memory error modeling isn't actually accounted for at the moment. So we're just looking at just the internal software overheads of managing tasks, and it doesn't model when an error happens, what it does to actually recover from those errors, and those mechanisms are very complicated and detailed. But In the future, I plan to, I would like to incorporate those error models and take into account for what happens inside when to recover those errors.
So for now, it's fully abstracted as a clean, defect-free media.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.